We're going to stay with books, but grown-up books now, and not works of fiction. Very much not works of fiction. I'm holding a copy of a book called Helga in my hand. It's by Helga Gerhardy, who's with me now. Let me give you an idea of what it's about. The first part of the book describes Helga's life as a member of a Swiss family trying to live an ordinary life in Hitler's Germany. As a young girl, she met Hitler and supported her mother through some frightening SS searches of her home. When the story reaches the point where the Russians broke through the German defences in 1944, the action really begins. During her flight from the advancing Russian armies, Helga escaped death many times. She was buried alive in an air shelter, twice throwing herself from the back of a moving lorry, seconds before it exploded in flames, and leaping onto the buffers of a moving train, falling through the ice into the deadly waters of a lake. It's a gripping and heart-rending story, I can certainly say that, and I'm very pleased to be able to meet her in the flesh. Helga Gerhardy, good afternoon, a very warm welcome.
Oh, hello, John.
It is an extraordinary life that you led, and in going through your memories to write this book, was it painful for you?
Yes, very. It took me a long time before I was able to write at all, because I would never talk about the part when I was a refugee, and even my children only knew about the time when I was living under Hitler. But when it came to the point where I was supposed to describe the horrors I went through, I was closed up and I just couldn't say a word. So it was suggested to me to write, and it would then be easier for me to talk about it, which I did. And I also felt that people ought to know about it, because in this country particularly, you know more about what happened in the West, because everybody, I mean, we've got the Normandy landings coming up now, the anniversary, and everybody knows about that part. But what happened in the East when the Russians entered Germany? We all left because we were terrified of the Russians. But in the West, nobody left during the war. All the Germans have stayed behind. Mm. And although I was Swiss, it didn't make any difference whether you're Swiss or German. When the Russians came, you just left.
As a refugee, I mean, you suffered terrible privations. Did you at any point give in to despair? Did you think, well, this is it, I can't do any more?
No, I don't think I did. Although I saw a lot of refugees dropping by the wayside, and I mean, it was a very, very severe winter. We had about 10 to 15 degrees below zero, and to walk along without any shelter is not easy. But when I saw them, I used to think, that's not going to be me. And my mother actually had given me a small phial with cyanide, which I wore around my neck. And whenever I was terrified, and when the Russians came too near to us, I used to just put my hand up to my neck, and I used to think, it's all right. This is like a talisman. I can just take this, and then it's finished. But I wasn't going to just drop down and gradually die.
You weren't going to give in?
No, I wasn't. I was only 20 years old. I mean, I still had a life in front of me. I wasn't going to give in, no. But I was alone, because, you see, we were all scattered when the Russians really broke through, and I had to do this journey on my own with the refugee trek.
I said at the beginning that you're one of the few people alive who must have met Hitler. How did that come about?
Well, that was an accident. I didn't have an appointment.
Well, I didn't think it was like, not like going to the dentist or something.
No. It really was an accident. He came to Königsberg, the town where we lived in East Prussia, in 1938. And I just finished my piano lesson. And going home, of course, we had all the crowds standing along the road waiting for him to come. So I squeezed through the people and I thought, I must get across the road, because my father was coming home that weekend. I bought him some flowers, you know, just a little bunch of violets. So I squeezed through the crowds of people and jumped in the road, and I'm afraid that was the moment he came round the corner. And an SS man got hold of me, thinking, because I had the flowers in my hand, I wanted to give this to the Führer. And I sort of whispered, you know, they're really for my father, you know. But he just took my hand, and Hitler stopped, and he bent down, and he looked at me. He had cold blue eyes, and he took my flowers. I'm afraid my hand just came up. I was absolutely petrified. And he looked at me and he said, why aren't you in uniform? Because after the age of 10, every child in Germany had to belong to the Hitler Youth. And I didn't, and I had no uniform on. So I said, well, I'm Swiss, actually. I'm not German. But people were shouting, Heil Hitler, and screaming. And I don't think he heard me. And the SS man just got hold of me, and he said, well, you can go now. Now you have given him the flowers, you see.
When I came home, my father was actually a bit cross about it because he said, as long as it doesn't get into the papers, because he felt, as a Swiss, and with us not really being for Hitler, it would have been awful to show a picture of me giving flowers to Hitler.
What was the family's attitude to the regime?
My father always persuaded us, we were four children, he persuaded us to not say anything. He always used to say, you are guests in this country, and whatever happens, you have to be quiet. But, you know, in East Prussia, it wasn't so bad, because it was so far to the east that I think once Hitler came to power and the Jewish people disappeared and so on, there was quietness. You didn't realize very much what was going on from that point of view. And also, I wasn't in the Hitler Youth, so a lot of it, I think, I wasn't taught.
Since the war, I mean, you must look back on an extraordinary life, and we in this country quite rightly complain about this and that, but what you've been through puts what we're going through today to some extent in perspective. Has it changed your attitude towards life? Are you less inclined to complain about things and feel sorry for yourself because of what you've been through in your past?
Yes, I think you're probably right. I've also been very particular with my children about food, for example. I mean, I starved a lot when I was a refugee, so I would never permit my children to throw any food away or leave something on a plate. I used to be rather on the strict side. I must admit they were very good. They soon got used to it, that I wouldn't allow food to be wasted. I used to, in the beginning, even sweep the crumbs and sort of give them to the birds. I couldn't see anything wasted.
Do you still feel anger?
I think I feel anger because my father was a very rich man, and when we eventually returned to Switzerland, we had nothing. Nothing at all. And we had to start again. And it's never been given back to us or to anybody else. And the part where I came from is still Russian today. Although the eastern part of Germany has been reunited with the main part, where I lived, it was too far to the east, and I'm afraid Königsberg's become a Russian harbour, actually. And they never gave it back, the Russians. They just kept it, yes. So I sort of feel a bit bitter because we had a lovely house and a lovely home, and there's nothing left.
At the end of the war, when it was over, you travelled through Germany, I think, trying to contact all the members of your very scattered family.
Yes, I did. On a broken bike. That poor bicycle kept on breaking down all the time. Yes, I did 800 kilometres from Hamburg down to Mainburg, which is near Munich. Oh, I slept in haystacks and in barns, and I was even imprisoned by the American occupation forces. And that's a little story in the book, because I fell in love with an American. But nothing came of it in the end.
Ships that pass in the night.
That's right.
Did you find all the members of the family that you were looking for?
Yes. I must say we all got together again. And we lived in terrible poverty on an ex-radio station close to Hamburg. There were only empty barracks. But the British occupation forces actually helped us to get palliasses and a bit of crockery. And the toilet was a little shed in the back with a bucket. And we had a well. But at least we weren't in a very big campsite. We wanted our privacy, and that radio station was quite good for us for another year. And then we returned 1946 to Switzerland and started a new life.
I read that your story, your extraordinary story, there's the possibility of being turned into a television series. Is that right?
Well, I don't know. It would make a good story, I think, I've been told. But you never know what it is.
Well, if you want to read the book, and I can recommend it, it's called Helga. It's by Helga Gerhardy. It's published by Virona Books, V-I-R-O-N-A, and it costs £6.99. And I assume that's generally available. Is that right, Helga?
Yes, you can get it in W.H. Smith, and if not, you can order it through a bookshop, or you can order direct from Virona Publishing.
Helga by Helga Gerhardy, and Helga, thank you very much for joining us. Thank you.
Thank you, John. FM 104.9, Radio Leicester.